Welcome, everybody, to Mormons on Mushrooms. Just a reminder that this is a storytelling podcast where we discuss alternative methods for healing from trauma and seeking a more fulfilling life. A lot of times on the podcast, we discuss triggering topics, and we ask that you make your personal mental health top priority. Lastly, the opinions offered by our guests don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the hosts. Sit back, buckle up, and enjoy.
Anything off limits to talk about, Tyler?
Not at all, man. I am an open book. Since I got out of prison, I've kind of been much more open about my...
It tends to open you up, doesn't it?
It does. In many ways. Sexually, physically, emotionally. I learned how to give tattoos and blowjobs. So...
You know, we've always said on this podcast that we'd love to give him a mean blowjob.
Yeah, I think if I really went for it, I would know my way around a sweet old blowjob.
I think if I had to, I'd probably figure out how to do it.
Like, to save the world, I could knock somebody's socks off. That's all I'm trying to say.
Let's test it out.
Like, if the aliens landed and they were like, your entire species is toast unless you suck this dick, I'd be like, okay, well, great. Get ready for the best moment of your universal life.
They would write songs about you, Doug, if you did that.
Dude, it would be in like weird 7-2 timing and all that kind of stuff, like alien time.
How's your whiskey? Did you get a splash of water?
It's been great. I keep trying to drink it and I keep laughing. So I'm like breathing it in. I brought the High West whiskey, representing some Park City here
in California. Nice. Yeah, I love High West. Yeah, Tyler, you asked if there's anything you need to know before we start. And just to kind of echo what Mike said, I've listened to your podcast. Our production value and form is much simpler than what y'all are doing. So
that's probably for the best. We're gonna get too much fucking time for that podcast.
We may fanboy just a little bit because I'm a big fan of the Amazing Randy. I was a Pendulette disciple for a while. So we may fanboy a little bit, but mostly we're just gonna be like, tell us your secrets and what was your childhood like and what traumas did you face and tell us about your experiences with LSD, that kind of thing.
Okay. Easy.
Easy peasy.
So anyway, let me just get it off my chest so that I'm cool. I guess I would be considered like a big fan of the work that you're doing. And so I'm feeling a little nervous. So can I just get my nervousness out of the way right now?
You get that blowjob and save the planet.
Yeah. So here's, I'm just going to go, yes, I can't believe it. I'm so excited to meet you. Thank you for doing this. Awesome. Okay. Now I could get back and be cool. You're fucking radical, man.
Thanks, bud. I appreciate it. I love doing what I do, and I'm so grateful that I get to tell stories. So let's tell some now.
Yeah.
Well, this is that we started this off by saying this is a storytelling podcast because any of the stories we tell in here, especially when it comes to anything illegal, are just stories. Right?
You're not culpable if they're just creations of the mind.
I mean, I guess we could argue this is all just a creation of the mind, right?
I think we're living in some kind of alien, you can cut this part.
No.
You don't edit, do you?
We don't edit.
Just let Tyler sound like an asshole.
No. But Tyler, we do say in every episode, I think we have a moment where he said, we'll cut this out. And we...
You never do.
Maybe. Never do.
2% of the time.
There's something funny God damn it. I'm also drinking whiskey. But
edit him too.
Yeah. See? We got to edit me stumbling across my words here. I'll say this about the storytelling nature of this podcast. Every story that we tell on this podcast is exactly as true as the story of Abinadi going before King Noah and being burned for testifying about his testimony about God. So however people want to take that, it's that true.
Okay. Well, hopefully I won't be burned for my stories.
No, you'll be celebrated for your stories. Much like Abinadi is now celebrated for his stories.
It's a great name, Abinadi.
That is, right? I mean, there are some good names. There's some weird names in the Book of Mormon.
Yeah, it's because they're all invented.
Well, how about, I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast yet, Doug, but the best story in the Book of Mormon is Mahanri Moriankamer. Actually, the best name in the Book of Mormon is Jared.
Yeah, it's pretty yeah. simple, isn't it?
Yeah. He just ran right. out that day. He was like, fuck this shit. Jared.
The guy from Subway.
Yeah.
But I love how they're brothers, you know? It's like, Jared, this is Jared. This is one, my one son, Jared, and my other son, Mahanri Moriankamer. So you can just call him Jared's brother.
Let's make it simple. Well, I mean, Lehi kicked it off too. You know, Lehi's like, this is my oldest brother, Laman, his brother, Lemuel, my third child, Nephi, and that's Sam. We call him Sam. Like, that's right. It's like, what are these fucking names?
That's so stupid. That's so bad. Love it. Talk about fiction.
Yeah. Wow.
So just to set the setting of where we are, we're in my office in Pasadena, California, which I recently moved here, not but 4 months ago, from the great Zion curtain of Salt Lake City.
Oh, wow.
I dug under the curtain and came here to Pasadena. So we're here in my office, which I love this office. And I have whiskey and wine and water.
And Mike. Yeah, and I'm just to give you the scene of this office, man, it's pretty fucking dope. We got like some cool circular chairs here, and we got all these posters: Sons of Perdition, Murder of the Monk and the Mormons, An Honest Liar, I Want My MTV, Was I in a Cult?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. We got all the hits.
All the hits. So we're surrounded by all the hits. And
I'm feeling kind of FOMO not being there with y'all. I'm also in my office, but in the way that you are, that you dug under the Zion curtain, I'm mm-hmm. just dug under the Zion curtain. Like, I'm still here. So,
you know, there is nothing wrong. We were just talking about this. Salt Lake is great. Utah is a good spot. It's nice. It's friendly. It's clean. It's affordable. Well, it used to be affordable. It's, for the most part, really great weather. I don't love how it's Republican-led and will be for the next 10 to 15 or 20 years. That drives me crazy, and that's unfortunate because it's a very liberal bastion, that city of Salt Lake, of very progressive thinkers, but they'll never really have a voice, and that makes me sad.
Yeah, same. Unless the property values keep going up, and then the only people who will be able to afford to live here are liberal. So
perhaps.
Well, and not to go too much into Salt Lake, but there is an element of whenever I'm there, I don't know. I needed for my own personal healing, I think, to get out. And, you know, it happened to coincide at the time when I was leaving the church. Well, I was questioning the church when I left. But now whenever I go, there is like there's the beauty of the mountains, the beauty of the people. But then there's just like this oppressive energy that kind of just like, I don't know, maybe that's my own trauma coming up. But I feel a little suffocated when I'm there sometimes.
You know, I've often said that Salt Lake, everyone's either trying to prove how Mormon they are or how not Mormon they are.
Yeah, well said.
And I think those two, you know, kind of extremes conflict. And so you do have a lot of feelings around that. But I like being there. I like visiting there. It's nice. You know, my family's there for the most part. So.
Well, Mike, why don't you kick us off with a little bit of an introduction on Tyler here? I mean, you and I know what we're up to, but Tyler, who knows who recognizes you from voice only? Like, obviously podcast fans will, but you probably have a shitload of movie fans that may not recognize your voice. So
shitloads. Just buckets full of movie fans.
Well, we did a little bit of an introduction before. Go ahead, Doug, what you're saying.
No, I just was laughing at myself.
Well, I'm gonna call you a world-renowned filmmaker.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I will take it because areas of Bangladesh definitely have, I have big pockets of fans there. So world renowned.
I mean, that's when you know you've made it.
Yeah. I mean.
And so, you know, we've talked, I mentioned a lot of the posters that are surrounding me now. and many of which I've watched over the years. I remember watching Sons of Perdition a while back, and then loved An Honest Liar. And then I think most people will resonate with your recent film, Murder Among the Mormons, which we don't really have to get into too much. I know you just recently did a Mormon Stories interview on that. And then you recently launched a podcast.
I did.
And I think a lot of ex-Mormons will like this podcast. And it's called Was I in a Cult?
Mm-hmm.
And it's brilliant. And, you know, when we first had lunch, Tyler, you were talking about the number of hours it takes to produce one episode. And I was like, whoa, I think you mentioned something like 100 hours.
It's hundreds. Yeah. It's easily hundreds of man hours for each episode.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I think, Doug, we record in like an hour and a half. Seth takes a few hours to edit, and then we're good.
Yeah. Well, Mike, don't forget the show notes and the artwork that you do to create like the little
that's true.
Post
that's
another on Instagram.
We'll tag in another 30 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
But then I went and listened to that podcast and I was like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
The music, the storytelling. I mean, you're a fucking storyteller and a brilliant one. And so it all weaves in. And I loved, so in the first two episodes, you actually interview an ex-Mormon who actually was sucked into a polygamous cult. And so I guess a cult within a cult.
Right, right.
Yeah, I was just captivated by her story, I loved how when you and your co-host chime in at just the right moments to kind of explain Mormonism, explain the cult, explain polygamy. And then it's just like, it's narrated in a certain way. The tension builds in a certain way. And I think you guys are just the beginning of something really cool with this podcast.
Thanks. It's been, I have to say, like a blast, although it's a lot of work. And I'm not afraid of work. I like creating stories and I want to make sure they're told well. And doing that takes work. So, I mean, the podcast it focuses on one individual who was in and left a cult. And it tells their individual story. And some of the people we've talked to, and we're relatively new in it. We've only done 12 episodes at this point. We're slated for 20 for the first season. But some of the stories, man, are crazy. And some of these cults that people are in are insane. And not just your typical Scientology, Children of God, you know, polygamous cults or whatever. Like, we just did an episode about an acting class where young actors come to Hollywood, want to make it. They sign up for an acting class, wanting to fulfill their dreams. And next thing you know, the acting teacher is a guru and a life coach. And then you have to give her money. And then you have to obey what she says. And you have to go to India. They're in a cult.
Yeah.
It shows a number of things. One, people who join cults, you know, everyone assumes that they're these googly-eyed, glassy-eyed individuals who get their sheep. But that's not necessarily the case. People that join cults, by and large, are idealists. They want to make the world a better place. They want to lose weight. They want to fulfill their dreams. They want to get to heaven. They want to be a better person. And some asshole, charismatic leader, takes advantage of that. And those individuals are the worst types of individuals, I think. People who take advantage of susceptible and willing and idealistic human beings. So we tell those stories. And man, there's some crazy cults and crazy stories, but ultimately there's beautiful people who recognize they're in a cult. And
yeah, it's so funny that you're approaching it from that angle, because I was kind of feeling the same way about, I mean, obviously I have some strong feelings about cults. I feel like I grew up and was raised in a cult, Mormonism. Your podcast has done an interesting thing to me, and I'm interested to hear what your experience has been. It has painted the followers, or, you know, those who join a cult, in a different light for me. They're very, I mean, you use the word idealists. They're good people and they're telling the story. And there's a level of, you can almost feel them kind of, in a lot of ways, laughing at themselves, because the alternative is to cry and to feel like they were bamboozled and fooled and feel like a complete moron, which is not the case. Has anything been surprising to you? I mean, now you're becoming like an expert on cults. What's been surprising during this process?
Some of the people that we feature were born into it. But what I found is this, and I don't want to say that it's cliche, but in some ways it is. Individuals who join kind of have the same backstory in some ways. They a lot of times they come from a rough childhood, or they weren't loved, or, you know, they, especially for women, they get in really bad relationships. And in many ways, that's their first cult. So I think that's what surprised me, is kind of a lot of people follow the same pattern in going in them. But in many ways, by being in this cult and recognizing they're in a cult, they completely change their lives. The worst thing you can do is, after you leave a cult, you don't say that it's a cult. You say, I was in a really bad acting class, or it was a religion, it wasn't that bad. Because ultimately what happens is you cult hop, you go to another cult, you don't learn your lesson. And when they do say that, they say, my God, I was in a cult, I got taken advantage of. They go, now I'm not going to be abused in a relationship. Now I'm not going to work for a shithead boss who takes advantage of me. So sometimes these individuals need that to join a cult in order for them to be free. Of course, for every person who left a cult, there's dozens who are still wearing the togas, if you will.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad we're chatting about this right now, because, you know, we've done 70 or so episodes of the podcast, and there's an element with mushrooms and spirituality, which the theme of the podcast kind of circles around that, where, you know, the mushrooms introduced us to a whole new world of yoga and meditation and energy work,
gurus,
and
gurus,
tarot, gurus,
shamans.
Right. And, you know, we say this a lot on this podcast, that you are your own shaman, but I can see how in the middle of that, I was on episode 2 of your podcast, and it was the story, and we was talking about the polygamous cult she got sucked into, and the end of the world. And I even texted Doug, and I was like, Doug, this is really speaking to me, because one of my fears about getting, I guess, reclaiming my spirituality is not wanting to get duped again.
Right.
And I think I'm grateful for the experiences that Mormonism taught me, in that now I kind of get that feeling when I feel like I'm betraying myself. I know what that kind of feels like, but I still get worried about that. And
sure.
Yeah. And I want to approach everything with wide-eyed and curiosity. And so it's like, oh yeah, I'll go to a Reiki healer. I'll go to an energy worker. I'll go to, I'll do tarot spreads. I'll do all that, but even embrace them and have good experiences. But I always want to hold on to that sense of, hold on to it loosely, that, you know, not get duped again, I guess.
Right. And look, you said it, Doug, you said you were raised in a cult, and it's only taken me the last few months for me to say, being raised Mormon, that I was raised in a cult. It's still hard. It's really hard. And I think a lot of Mormons, ex-Mormons, really have difficulty saying the C word. And I do. But the more you look into it, and the more you look into the history, and I don't need to tell you guys, but it is culty. And the way they limit information and their background. And look, if there was a church down the street where the guy had 27 wives, one of whom was 14, and he printed his own money, you know, you'd say, that's not a church, that's a fucking cult. But yet we don't acknowledge that the religion that we were raised in is a cult. And I like to say, instead of a cult, it has cult-like tendencies, or it's cultish, which, you know, softens it a little bit. But it's hard to say the C word.
It is. Yeah. That's funny. It's almost like I'm doing it from this false sense of protecting my loved ones who are still in. It's almost like, for me to call it a cult is an accusation against all of my family and right, friends and you know, loved ones that are still in it. It's almost me accusing them of being so blinded by the cult itself that they're too stupid to see through it, or they can't. And I would never want to do that. And so that's why that word is so scary to use, because, I mean,
right,
I don't know of any like cults that have like a pretty good image, like, you know, like, right, I mean, I guess Mormonism, right, could be like the cult with the best image, maybe.
Possibly. Yeah. It's probably the largest, I would say. And yeah. And you're right about the family thing. Cause if you said, oh, my mother's in a cult, people would be like, well, you should go rescue her.
Yeah.
Before she drinks Kool-Aid or something.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's tough to say that.
It's tough. And I've even been feeling it as we're talking about it right now. Cause you know, my family learned about this podcast. I was trying to like keep it under wraps for a lot of reasons, right? But a few months ago.
Because of all the money you're making off
right,
it.
Right, yeah.
There would be all that to spread that love.
I don't want beggars at my door.
Right? All those goddamn hours we put into this thing are really starting to pay off.
Well, I was about to say, Tyler, you were talking about you have over a million downloads and you just barely started.
Yeah, we did. We had a million downloads in the first under 2 months, which was pretty cool.
Oh, so wow. Cool. And so we're happy to add our dozens of listeners to yours.
There are dozens of us.
I will take them into my fold.
Yeah. But one of the first things that I think my dad listened to an episode when he first found out. And I think in that episode, we used the C word. And that really hurt him. And he was just like, it's not, he got defensive and it's not a cult. And I get it. I get it's hard because when you're in it, it still means so much to you, or you feel like it does. And you've projected your safety onto this institution, your security. And if it starts to wobble, that gets scary.
Sure.
And so, yeah, there's a resistance to it, but I think there's just a power to, even if a listener is like, the C word's too strong, go in and just read the attributes of a cult. And you can go, okay, check, 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 check. So it has the cult-like attributes. And I think that there's a value in recognizing that, whether you're still believe that, okay, yeah, the church, if you still believe the church is true, recognize that, okay, but it still has these tendencies.
Right. And what we are trying to do with this podcast, because typically when people think cult, they think Charles Manson, they think David Koresh, they think Heaven's Gate. Mm-hmm. But cults are everywhere. And it can be a relationship. It can be an acting class. It can be a corporate setting. And there are cultic behaviors everywhere. It can be politics, for God's sakes. We're seeing it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So by just taking the word cult and not making it such a, such an out of the way word that only a few people join, we're saying, okay, there are cults everywhere and the Mormon church can be that.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. So. And I think you're more susceptible to it the more you put value in it. I mean, I could think of even you were talking about maybe a spiritual healer. Like if I go somewhere in LA, find a yoga group, and all of a sudden there's this very charismatic leader, and I'm projecting all of this goodness and healing onto him and feel like I am healing because of him. I have now projected that out. And that's where you can get in that danger. Similar to almost falling in love. When you fall in love with someone and you believe that you have all these new feelings stirring inside of you and you say, okay, I'm feeling this because of this other person. And if this other person goes away, I will never have access to these feelings again.
Right. Right.
That's where that projection can be strong.
Yeah. And it's easy. People can join in cults very quickly and easily. Yeah. We are primed as human beings. We are primed to accept what leaders say. We're primed to be manipulated. We're primed to be love bombed and to be in a community of like-minded, like-thinking individuals. So joining a cult is, it can be more common than you think. And for me to say I was in a cult is still weird, but it's actually kind of freeing in a way. It makes me really... In some ways, it makes me understand why people are still in it. Because I look at well-meaning, intelligent individuals and go, why the fuck do you believe this? I do. It's really hard for me to go, how come Joseph Smith had sex with a 14-year-old, man? Like, that's the guy you want to follow? You have a statue of him in your building? Like, that's a horrible human being. If my buddy Todd did that, I'd kick his ass. But so it makes it easier for me to go, oh, they're in a cult. That's why I can see that now. So that's why they can put those things aside.
Yeah, what is that? Like, that's such an interesting thing, because I think that if you pulled, it's impossible to do this, but if you pulled anyone back, to this like zoomed out view, I mean, they don't got the statues just in their buildings. They got like the portraits of Joseph Smith hanging in their house, If someone, hung in their house a picture of a well-known famous child molester, a modern day child molester, you would feel very uncomfortable and say, look, I I just don't think that we can have any kind of connection or relationship because you've got a picture of a fucking child molester hanging in your entryway.
Why do you have a statue of Harvey Weinstein on your mantle? Yeah,
exactly. Why are you such a Jeff Epstein guy? Like, I don't understand what's happening here. You know, obviously there's like that cognitive dissonance or the separation of time. It was, you know, the product of his time. That's bullshit. What do you think it is that puts those blinders over people? Is it just that need for belonging? Is that fear? Is it Pascal's wager of just like, I'm afraid of what a lack of faith could possibly mean?
I think people are loath to admit they were wrong.
Oh,
it is very difficult to say, I spent my life following the wrong leader. I backed the wrong horse. I was wrong. And all the people that I talked to and told I was right to, I now have to say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. And I dare say if people more readily said that I'm wrong and I forgive me, I was wrong and I made a mistake, the world would be a much better place. Politics would be better. Sports would be better. Relationships would be better. Just the world would be a better place if people said, I learned a little bit. I was wrong. And if we allowed them to do that, if we said, you know, that's cool. I'm glad you said you were wrong. I'm glad you learned, because that's noble, man. That you learned something. You learned something and you grew. And instead of being a flip-flopper, you're better. So it's on us to accept people who say they were wrong and not go, I told you so, man, dickhead. But it's on them as well to say, I was wrong, and vice versa.
And isn't it so liberating to be able to say that too? I was wrong. I mean, I think about it like the hills I used to die on when I was a Mormon, when I was a conservative, active Mormon, I would die on so many hills. Like I would hold that hill no matter what. Right. And now it's like, okay, I die on a hill for my family. Doug, I would die on a hill for you for sure. You know,
thanks, man. Same.
But like, apart from that, it's like, no, I'm willing to get down off this hill.
right. I'll tell you, saying I was wrong to your partner, spouse, lover, boy, that's the best thing you can do.
Well,
even if you don't mean it, it's good.
That's right. I mean, I guess I can only speak as an American, but humans love that shit. We love an underdog. We love a comeback story. We love someone to say, I was wrong. I'm learning. I want to fix it. I want to get better. Like, we eat that shit up.
Yeah, especially nowadays. I think people are more able to say, oh, you took steroids when you played baseball. At least you're standing up and saying, I did it. We might say you were horrible, but at least you admitted it and we'll forgive you. But when you go to your grave saying, I never cheated on baseball, I never took steroids. Well, fuck you. Of course you did. We know you did. Everyone says you did. We can see the stats. But we'll forgive guys like Jason Giambi, who said, I did it and I'm sorry. And it doesn't take much. We all make mistakes. That's the beauty. That's the beauty of today's storytelling, I think. We like flawed protagonists. It used to be you watched a movie and it was Cary Grant and he was perfect. Now we have horrible protagonists. We like those kind of characters that we can say, they're a mess because I'm a mess and they're going to get better and hopefully I can get better. And that is storytelling that has improved, I think, Americans' forgiveness. So hopefully people can attach to that and start to forgive and accept and admit.
Not only that, but we love the flawed villains, the villains that show humanity. Think of like Walter White.
Totally.
Walter White, right? We see his humanity. We see why he's doing what he's doing, but he's a fucking villain, man.
Yeah, he's selling drugs to children, for God's sakes.
He's a mass murderer as well. Like Walter White is a bad dude. And yet I cried like a baby when he died. Oh, spoiler alert.
He didn't die. There's a lot of people who say he didn't die, you know.
That, yeah, I've read those.
Right.
Hashtag Walter lives. Is that?
I just think we as humans are very forgiving. I think we are for the most part. And I wish we had more option to forgive.
It's so funny you mentioned like the Cary Grant, like flawless Superman kind of thing, because then we overcorrected. Like if you think about the 70s, like you think about like Rocky. Basically, Rocky is in the zeitgeist as Rocky gets his ass kicked until the last second of every little thing and then miraculously, you know, snatches victory out of the jaws of defeat. And then it kind of got to the point where it's like, there's too much of that too, by the way. Like I'm okay with a protagonist or a hero that is flawed, who struggles with very human tendencies. But I also don't need my heroes to get their ass kicked for 129 minutes, only for the right. final minute them to emerge victorious by some, you know, weird. I don't know how Rocky beat Ivan Drago, by the way. I have no idea how that's humanly possible. And it's lost on me a little bit. I didn't mean for this to become a Doug breaks down Rockies 1-6, but.
Well, I think modern storytelling allows people to continue to mess up.
Yeah.
And especially when we're talking about long formats of extended series. And it wasn't that way. Even in the 70s and 80s, that, you know, the movies that we grew up with or the TV that we grew up with, at the end of the character, you know, at the end of the film, Archie Bunker got better. You know, people learn their lessons. You know, Willis and Arnold Jackson of the Different Strokes learn to be better people.
Yeah.
But nowadays, you roll into the next episode that you're still an asshole. You know, you're still trying to figure it out.
Most of our heroes are assholes. I mean, yeah. I'm sorry. We can cut this next. Before we move on to another subject, Tyler, I got to just say this, and this part we can actually maybe cut out. But in your podcast, you know, you do go through some well-known cults, some cults that I never had heard of. Like one of them was Nexium. Is that right?
Nexium. That's a crazy cult, man.
That was a crazy episode.
That was the girl on, wasn't the girl in Smallville that was part of that?
Yeah. That's a horrible, horrible cult. But yeah.
But your first episode is a two-parter. So first and second episode, I guess. And it's like we were talking about, it's about, I guess, some kind of branch of Mormonism, polygamists down in Manti, Utah. That took me down a stroll down memory lane, because my freshman year, when I was trying to play basketball for Snow College in Ephraim, Utah, we had to do some kind of like project. I wasn't very good at like paying attention in what the project was or what we were doing. But one of our things was we had to do this like current affairs group project. And we sent, this is such a stupid ass story. So we sent one of the girls from our group out to interview the head dude, like Jeff or Jim or whatever the dude's name was.
Jim Harmston.
Yeah. We sent her out to interview this homeboy. Manti's neighboring town of Ephraim, Utah.
Sure.
Well, I had a crush on her. I won't say her name, but I had a crush on her. And so when she came back and was like giving us her notes and telling us all about the interview, she was talking about how this dude was really flirting with her and really kind of like, you know,
oh yeah,
laying the groundwork.
He wanted her.
Not only was I jealous of him for flirting with her, I also was like, I kind of like did that thing of, you know, that over masculine, like where I was talking shit on him and kind of like, oh, how do these people get duped into this cult and how do people get into this kind of shit? Meanwhile, prepping to put my papers in to go on my mission to Taiwan. Right. And so thank you for that. That episode took me on a big old juicy stroll down memory lane of when I was actively in a cult, judging others for being
in a cult.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, a cult not very different from the one you were in, actually.
Yeah. Yeah,
That cult was probably more akin to what your cult was when it was started. It was Mormonism on steroids. It was Mormonism the way Joe and Brigham intended it to be.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we get off the subject of cults, I just want to say one more thing. Because I think there's one more element to just not being able to admit you were wrong. There's something that happens like when we're children and we believe our parents are perfect. Our safety when we're a young baby and a young toddler, we die if our parents are not there. You know, we rely on them. So there's that safety. And you know that time in your life when you kind of like, maybe you're hitting a teenager and you realize that adults are just like kids with beards. Like, like that illusion, that mirage of being an adult and having your shit together kind of fades. I think that same safety then just gets projected out to a heavenly God. Like, okay, my safety is not here anymore. My safety is there. We love safety as humans.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And so there's an element of like, you've projected your safety into this organization, these teachings. And I know we touched on it earlier a little bit, but when that starts, that mirage starts to shimmer, damn, that's a scary thing.
Sure. Yeah. We touched on it. We like safety. I mean, we are afraid most of all of the unknown. And what's the greatest unknown? Well, dying. I mean, that scares the hell out of all of us, right? Whatever religion we're in or whatever. And some people just need to build a world around that to placate the fear that is coming. I'm sorry, it is coming, of the great unknown. And that's really what has driven humanity and mankind and evolution of our species where it is today, is what's going to happen when we're no longer around.
And so, similar to the relief we feel when we're willing to admit we're wrong, there's also a corresponding relief when we're willing to like look into that abyss of death and be like, I have no fucking clue what's going to happen. I could just like dissolve and not remember anything. I don't know. Or I could go on to the next adventure. I don't know.
But or you could become a butterfly.
I could become a butterfly, which I'd be down with that.
That sounds kind of fun.
You know, some of the butterflies are going extinct. So maybe we all need to come back as butterflies.
Perhaps. Perhaps.
But there's a freedom that comes from that, from being able to be like, you know what? There's almost like a safety and no, and not safety, that's the wrong word, but just like a thing of like, look, it's safety is an illusion. So strip that away and live our lives. And let's not, I don't know. And I know it ebbs and flows because I still try to feel safe. You know, I want to feel secure in my job. I want to feel secure in my home. I want my kids to be safe. But it's all, we just don't know.
You said there's a safety and then you corrected the word, but you were like, there's a safety in the phrase, safety is an illusion. Maybe there's a safety in the concept of reincarnation or becoming fodder for the grass. And then the grass is eaten by animals and then the animals are eaten by humans. Like I'm not willing to let go of my grip on that concept of seeking safety, because I think in seeking safety, I'm also seeking identity too, right? There's when you leave Mormonism, you lose a big, probably your whole identity. That's how I felt.
Sure. I mean, you lose, you know, a bit of your family, a bit of who you are, a bit of what makes you comfortable and habits. I mean, you have a habit when you're Mormon. I mean, the part of the worst part about breaking up with a girl or a guy is if, you know, you're used to being with that person and, oh, I want to see this movie. Well, I'm going with her. And then all of a sudden you don't have that. And you miss that part of the ease of saying, I'm going over here and I want to go to dinner and I'm going with my girlfriend. So that's part of leaving a religion, of course, is that same habit. And it's hard. It's heartbreak.
Tyler, that's a really good segue into a question for you. For a lot of us.
Is it?
It is, because for a lot of us,
you're going to ask about my ex-girlfriends now.
Yeah, aren't you? I want to know, like, what was the sex like and why did you guys break up and what happened?
Great. I'll show you pictures.
Yeah. No. So like a lot of us leaving the church, we do have that break with family where it causes some of that, you know, discomfort or awkwardness or tension or whatever. But what's that like? So I'm trying to get into your head a little bit of the rest of us have done it fairly privately. You've done it in the way that your career path has taken you is that you've taken some pretty bold, very public expressions of, I have left my faith. What, I mean, I don't know if there's a question in there somewhere, but what the hell's that been like?
Well, yeah. And in fact, in many ways, it has become part of my art and what I do and what I create and my modus operandi and who I am is because I left the Mormon faith. And whether I'm capitalizing on that or not, or whether I still have shit to deal with and work out and this is the way I'm doing it, I don't know, but it's working. And I'm still making ex-Mormon or anti-Mormon or non-Mormon or culty kind of projects. But ultimately, I do think I have something to work out. You know, when you're raised as a Mormon, you're raised to evangelize. You're raised to say what you feel, and you're raised to say it well. You get up in front of a congregation when you're 3 years old, and you rehash what they tell you to say, and you say it. You're raised to be an artist. You're raised to believe in yourself. And when Mormons leave that, they take those same kind of attributes with them to the next sphere of their world. And I did the same thing. I'm an artist and I need to be able to tell these stories. I need to be able to stand on a pedestal and say what I think is important. It just happens to be that what I think is important is trying to get people not to be deceived. I'm hardly the purveyor of honesty and truth, but I do have this disdain for liars. I mean, I made an entire film about it. James Randi, an honest liar, I made a film about a guy named James Randi who's spent his life trying to debunk faith healers and spoon vendors and psychics and people who use deception, not for entertainment, but for profit. And I still have this need to like figure out why people believe things that are right in front of your face. Like this happened and you still believe it and you won't believe that this happened. It's really hard for me to, you know, to kind of justify that or figure out why it is. Now, look, I know that I'm probably being deceived in some manners, and somewhere out there, a QAnon guy is being like, dude, you believe crazy shit. And maybe I do. I don't know yet, but that's part of trying to figure that out. So I innately am interested in deception because at one point in my life, I believed something wholeheartedly. And then in one spin, I went, holy shit, everything I was taught and everything I believed in is a lie. And I felt it. And I felt that. I was reading, I think, A Gathering of Saints is what it was. And I read about the Book of Abraham. And when I read that, I just had, you know, that almost reverse burning of the bosom.
Oh, yeah.
Where it made me feel horrible. I just couldn't believe that I was duped so blatantly and forthright. Just this was a lie. You were being lied to. And not only that, but we told you to go out and lie to others about it. And I did. And that moment, and I remember exact moment, I was filming Sons of Perdition and we were on a break. We were literally filming my first film, Sons of Perdition. And I read that and it just went, oh my God. And my whole life kind of spun off of that in some aspects.
So when you started Sons of Perdition, you were still believing in some way.
I mean, I'd left the faith, but I still was hanging around. I still didn't have the same tendencies and inclinations towards it being as dangerous, the church being as dangerous and deceitful as it is. Mm. Or that the history, I didn't know the history as well as I do. I mean, internet was barely around at that time. You couldn't get on and find out that Joseph Smith had 37 wives. I didn't know that. I didn't know these stories. I didn't know these lies that had been fed to me. So that story, Sons of Perdition, if you haven't seen it, it's great. Sons of Perdition is about kids who are
Great.
It's kicked out of polygamy.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a heartbreaker.
But it's also beautiful in many ways. Well, that was my story, and my partner, Jenny Lynn Merton, who I directed that with. That was our story, writ large. That was us leaving the faith at that time and really coming to grips with it. So,
wow.
Making art, making movies is hard. It's hard. I don't make bad art. I just won't. It's funny because I was a C-minus student through high school. I just wasn't a great student, but I will not turn in a shitty paper. I just won't. I will not. There's enough bad art in the world. I won't turn. My art hangs in museums. It doesn't hang in coffee shops.
Oh, damn.
And that's cocky, but I make sure that everything I put out is good. And that's why I put 100 plus hours into every freaking episode of a podcast, because it's important to me that these are heard and heard well. So yeah, I think Mormonism did that. It kind of put in this perfectionism in me that ultimately why I left the Mormon faith was because I could never attain what I needed. I could never hit that goal of like, you're doing great. You're doing fine. You know, you paid enough tithing. You've got enough food storage.
It's never enough. Thinking,
it's never enough.
It's never fucking enough.
And that living that life is exhausting. And look, it's never enough. I never spent enough time with my kids. I never exercise enough. I never, you know what I mean? But having that fact that you're never doing enough in the eyes of God, that's just too much, man. That's just too much to go through life and try to please someone whose standards are so fucking high, I can never do it. You know, and I can't live that way. I couldn't continually be running and behind the whole time.
So yeah, someone whose standards are so fucking high, but whose actions are so fucking contradictory to their standards, right? I mean, it's that's a weird dichotomy for me to break down.
and who keeps moving the bar. I feel like the bar's here. Oh, wait, no, the bar's here. You don't know where the fucking bar is. You don't know what good enough is. They keep that from you. But I love how you're talking about your art and like be cocky, man. Own that, because there's something beautiful about one. You're talking about C+ student, all that student shit is.
I said C- student, man. Don't give me.
Yeah. I was trying to give me that extra credit. Is a test to see if you're going to play into the system or not, right? It's like, we're going to give you the info, regurgitate us. Okay, you can live in our system, right? But what you're talking about is art. You're talking about like you're cut, and Doug's talked about this on the podcast. You slice open your veins, you're bleeding on a piece of paper.
Right.
You want to bleed well. And that's fucking great.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm still crushed by bad reviews.
Yeah.
I mean, I still want mommy to hang my picture on the fridge, my hand turkey, if you will. And I still don't like people saying that's not good or it's not, I don't like what you did. So I make sure it's as good as possible, which is kind of why I've glommed onto the documentary space, because it allows you to keep making it better. Mm. You know, I can do an interview with someone for Was I in a Cult? And it can be 4.5 hours long. And then I'll edit it down to 45 minutes and just, I'll keep working until it's great, until it's perfect, until there's enough timing and the music is good and everything's great. And that allows me to kind of keep making something better.
This goes along with something I was thinking about. I was actually talking to my therapist about this week. So Tyler, you mentioned the hand turkey that you want mom right. to hang on the fridge, right?
Right.
Did the right. two of you do that thing? I've talked to a few people about this, where it's like when you're like a, I don't know, kindergarten, first grade, and it's like a your profile traced on, and into, it's just the shadow of your profile then hung right. in like this portrait kind of deal.
Sure. Yeah, I've done that.
So I was thinking about it and talking to my therapist about the like the shadow work. You know, Mike, thing that we talk about a lot on the podcast is doing our shadow work. And I started going down this kind of insane thought rabbit hole of what if that little shadow portrait captured at a place in time my shadow, and then from there on out it's just been like my portrait of Dorian Gray, where all of my dirty deeds and all of my thoughts that I've ever had and all of my secrets that I've ever kept and all of the bad things that I've ever done are captured in that cute little side profile portrait of my shadow. And obviously my therapist was like, I think you're thinking too much about this shit.
It's possible.
I think that you might be trying to find, you know, she always accuses me of trying to find ways to refill my internal shame bucket, because removing Mormonism left a gaping hole in my shame bucket that I'm constantly trying to refill. And she's like, I think this might be one of those things where you're trying to make connections that don't quite make sense to the rest of the population. But it's just so funny that this week, that conversation happened this week. You're talking about wanting to be proud, wanting mommy to hang your stuff on the wall. That fucking portrait of me and my little brother, they still hang in the basement of my mom's house to this day. And I'm worried that if I look closely enough at it, it's going to be like the fucking portrait of Dorian Gray, where it's going to be disfigured and deformed and weird if I really look too close. So I'm glad we're hashing this out right now. And
well, I think I should charge you a therapy fee for this.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think you should go and gobble up some mushrooms and go look at that shadow.
Oh shit, dude. I don't dare. Are you kidding me? I don't dare do that right now. Speaking of mushrooms, should we talk about psychedelics?
I think it's a good time.
There's your segue.
So Tyler, have you partaken?
Naturally, of course I have. Yeah. In fact, it's been incredibly inspiring and important moments of my life is when I've taken hallucinogens. Yeah.
Same.
Yeah. And in dealing in some ways with religion in some aspects, the first time I did it, so I lived in Dallas for a little while. You know, I wanted to be a comedian for a long time, and I moved to Dallas. I don't know why I moved to Dallas. A friend of mine was moving down there, Clark Harris, and we moved down there. And I was living in this apartment. And one day, a guy said, "I want to take shrooms. You should take shrooms." And it was kind of in vogue for a little bit because I think The Doors had just come out, the movie The Doors.
Oh yeah,
and of course, you know, Jim Morrison, who's probably the worst human that ever lived, I think. If you've ever read No One Gets Out Here Alive, regardless, Everyone was kind of taking acid and LSD and kind of experimenting. And I said, I want to try that, but I want to research as much as I can about it. So I read everything I could about mushrooms. I really said, I'm going to go into this, not as like, let's get high, dude, but more as a spiritual experience.
So just pause for a second there. Where are you at right now in your life and your relationship with the church and stuff?
I was 22, 23. Now I'd gone on a mission and I was kind of left the church, but I was still kind of going and I'd still believed in it a bit. I hadn't really left. I was mostly just in my party kind of phase and moving away from mommy and daddy for a while. And I remember, so I took these shrooms and they were great. I learned a lot. I opened up, my doors of perception were opened wide. And then I took them another time, like a few weeks later. I was with another buddy and we were looking at the ground and there was like little seeds and we're just staring at the ground as one does when one is very high.
Yes.
And he said, in Africa, that would be a full meal, man. And I was like, fuck, it just sent me down a really bad path. I just like went from this is happy and wonderful into this is terrible. And then I went to home. I went to my apartment and I stared at my stuff for like a half an hour. And for the first time in my life, I looked at everything I owned because everything I owned was in that room other than my car. And I looked at that stuff for like a half an hour and summed up who I was as a human based upon the things that I owned and the things that I had hung on my wall. And I didn't like who I was. I didn't think I liked the kind of person I was. So it went worse from there. And then I found myself eventually in my closet, in the dark, crying and praying to God and basically saying, what am I supposed to do, man? What do you want me to do? What am I supposed to do? And right then I thought of my dad. Now, my dad is a good man. And I lost him just a couple of years ago, raised Mormon. He was a good Mormon guy for the most part, his whole life, but just a good, solid human being. Just loved his family, was a good father, was a good man. Everybody liked my dad. He was just a good guy. And I thought, I'm not that person right now. I need to be more like my father, who was just a good guy. And a week later, I left Dallas and came back to Utah. It totally changed the scope of my life, for better or worse. I mean, it could have been the worst decision I made. I don't know. But a completely one bad trip sent me from this road completely to another one.
Damn, I love how you even said like one bad trip, because you talk about the, you know, we always talk about like there's no quote unquote bad trips, and there are bad trips, but they're all meaningful. I don't know. It's kind of cool, this cycle here. So like you started the cycle there, created all this beautiful art. I'm motioning to the posters around me, which the listeners can't see, but whatever. And now you're back here, Mormons on mushrooms.
I guess so. Look, and I've always, whenever I've done them, even after that, I remember one time doing them with a buddy and just an old high school buddy. And I was, you know, 27, 28, whatever. I don't remember, but he just liked to get high, man. It was just cool to look at shit. And I remember one day we were walking the streets of Salt Lake, totally on mushrooms. And I was just zoning out on something. And I just had this idea, like you can be more, you know, you're meant to be something great. You're meant to do things amazingly. And I turned to him and I'm like, I'm meant to do something amazing. Which is like the stupid, you know, like that is such a high statement. And I still remember my friend just like, what do you mean? And I was like, I'm meant to do great things. I'm meant to bring art to the world and make great stuff. And I'm meant to do better than I'm doing. And he was just like, what do you mean, man? Look at that shadow. It's cool. You know? And so even then I still had these like spiritual openings and awakenings whenever I took mushrooms. And I think that's because I treated it as such. I didn't want to do it as like, I'm going to get high. I treated it as I'm going to use this as a portal to kind of recognize who I am.
I don't do it.
And to just talk about that, because that's, I think there's a magic. And I think there's a magic to Mormons doing these substances in a way. You hit on it right there. You were talking about that impossible bar, right? I can do better. Oh God, you know, but like God wants me to do better and I can't hit that mark. I can never hit that mark. But when you flip it and it becomes something that it's not like I'm doing it for God or anything, but you know, that seed is planted in you that like, oh, I was meant to do great things. I can do great things. And when that comes from the core of you out,
yeah,
that's where the magic, I think, of Mormons on Mushrooms is like, we've all had these seeds planted in us. Like you came to this world, you incarnated here as a, who are these children coming down?
Totally. You're right? Meant to be great. It's you're meant to be great. You. Right.
And
you're
so
God's chosen people, man. Yeah. Like you believe that for most of your life, that you, unlike the billions of other people, were special. Yeah. And you believe that. And I believe that. Mm-hmm. And I looked down upon people that weren't that way. And I felt sad for them. And I felt sorry for them. And I felt like it was my job to make them what I was. And you carried that in you. And then at some point you realize I'm not that. And that's shitty and it's terrible. And everything that I believed before, I'm not. And sometimes when you open those doors of perceptions through pseudocillin, you get that again and you go, I am great. I can be great. And I can do something great for the world. It's not bringing them religion. It may be bringing them art. It may be bringing them great cupcakes, whatever that is. But you can embrace that same thing that we were given, man. Yeah. That's kind of special. Most people weren't given that as children. You were told you're not that great and you can't do great things and you're not supposed to do that. You shouldn't do that. You were taught that you can be a fucking God, Mike.
Yes.
You were taught that you can be a God. It's bullshit, but you were taught that. And that's the bar that you have. Now, if you pull that bar down and go, okay, I can be a pretty good person, or I can make great business sense or great art or cupcakes, whatever it may be, that's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
But it takes that losing, I'll never be a God and I'm not being enough of a God, but I can be pretty good. It takes you losing that, I'll never reach that pinnacle. To say I can be pretty good doing this,
yeah,
and better than most.
And I'm going to push back on one thing. Sorry, Doug, I'll let you chime in here a second. It's hard to see because like we're in here in person, and like I'm now captivated by Tyler.
No, I can't blame you.
I've stopped looking at the Zoom screen.
look at each other. I'm looking at both of you enough. Yeah.
But I'm going to push back on one thing there because there's like this whole thing that you were taught you can be a God. And yeah, that's bullshit in the sense that like, I'm not going to go populate a planet called Kolob. Mine was going to be more like Alderaan. That was kind of my planet that I had envisioned.
That's a good name.
Yeah. I'd probably call it Alderaan. I was not very creative, but we are gods in a way of like creating our reality.
Sure.
And so that's what we're doing here. And I think that seed's planted in us, like you are powerful. You are special because everyone's fucking special, but like you can create your reality. You can birth things into this world that are going to blow people's fucking mind your art has blown people's fucking mind.
I'd like to think it's helped people see certain things. Sure.
Yeah.
And so, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so in that way, you're manifesting and creating your reality here, not in some future planet where you're going to have eternal sex with heavenly mothers.
That'd be good too, though. That actually wouldn't be bad either. It's actually straight off.
I subscribe to the unlimited plan, so I get unlimited celestial wives.
I get a punch card.
Yeah. So
for every 11 wives, I get one free.
Yeah, for me, Tyler, I was going to say almost the exact same thing that Mike said, which was, it's so funny because the mushrooms are so good about like, you know what? Yeah, you're part of this whole thing and you're part of the earth and we are all this like moving, flowing, liquid part of this. But then to Mike's point, then LSD says, oh no, not only can you be a God someday, you already are God and it just play in that space and be God. And I get the whole, I get it. I have it all figured out. I wish LSD lasted me longer because when I'm on LSD, I mean, I get it. Like I get the whole shooting match, man. I got it all figured out.
Right. But it's hard to put it into action when you're actually on it. That's the difficult for me. I mean, I microdosed for the first time the other day. Compliments to Mike. He gave me some some magic pills.
I mean, this is storytelling mode, and it's in storytelling mode, I gave him some magic pills.
And it was great. It was really like my things were just a little more beautiful.
Yeah.
The leaves outside were nice, and I was more creative, and I was more friendly. And it was really nice without the awful coming down period of that you usually have with mushrooms. It just gave me a little edge. It was really nice. It felt a little bit like I was juicing. Like as an artist, I feel like, you know, like I'm taking steroids as a baseball player, but I'm taking shrooms as a filmmaker.
You know what? They're all fucking juicing out there.
I know.
Yeah, I work at. I can't say where I work, but I work at a place where they're all fucking juicing, man.
Yeah. And in a place they probably would never expect that. But I actually enjoyed it. And I actually, you know, I'm getting up in age. I'm 50. I just turned 50 a month ago. And it doesn't, I don't think I could do LSD now. I think it would kick my ass for days. I also have a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
I don't think, I don't have the time to like,
yeah,
drop acid and then wake up and make him pancakes. I don't think I'd be very good at it. So I'll take a little something here and there.
Well, that's just to both of your points, to like juicing and everybody else is kind of juicing. And then Tyler, to what you mentioned earlier about baseball, like, I don't know, like if Mark McGwire is taking steroids, but the pitchers who are pitching to Mark McGwire are also taking steroids. Is that like, you know, like those math equations where you they cancel each other out on both sides? Like it aren't the sure, records. And
they just
still
even,
cool?
They just yeah. even, and one guy's better than the other.
Yeah.
I'm a big baseball fan. There were people juicing. We don't need to get into that, but yeah, they were doing it more than they should have and lied about it. That's the horrible thing. They got caught. They got their hand in the cookie jar and they said, I never did it, despite huge evidence to the contrary. And that's why I have little respect for people like that. Anyways.
Same. All right. I want to talk about, shit, I lost my train of thought. I have been also drinking whiskey, so I just lost my train of thought. Oh, I wanted to talk about Murder Among the Mormons.
Let's do it.
Can we?
Yeah.
I know that's like a right turn from where we were going.
No, that's not. It's right in the line. Find a segue.
Yeah. So, Tyler, I can tell you that my wife has never listened to a single episode of this podcast and doesn't care to. But when I told her that we were talking to you tonight, she had notes. Like she had notes. Because
great. Another studio giving me notes. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Well, no, she had notes of she wanted me to just ask everything about murder. She loved Murder Among the Mormons. I mean, I think we called out sick to work. I think we just binged and did not stop until we got through it.
Well, thanks. Ask away. Bring them.
I mean, I don't got any good questions. What's the reception?
I like the rapid fire questions when we've all been sipping whiskey. It's like rapid fire. It's like,
I know. Usually I would like just stay in that place of psychedelics and say, well, then how did it affect your art? And how did it change your life? And how do you see the world differently? But my whiskey addled brain's just like, yeah, but like, what about what have you heard from Mormons about murder?
our dozens of listeners are going to be like, this is like the slowest rapid fire we've ever heard.
Well, I'll try to speed it up then. Okay. So that's your question in regards to what do Mormons think about it?
I think that my question is just generally tell me everything about Murder Among the Mormons.
Okay.
is that what your mate wrote? Tell me everything. Or she has specific ones.
Yeah. No, she said, tell me, she said, I want to hear everything about Murder Among the Mormons.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you how it started for me. Every time I make a film, afterwards, there's this huge, there's this awful period of postpartum in a way, because making a film for me is amazing. And I love it and I get engaged in it. And most of the films I make, or all of the films I make, I love the subjects. I love the people. I love doing it. And when you're finishing a film, it's amazing because you're like putting the icing on the cupcakes and every piece of editing just comes together. When you're starting one, that's a huge open road. But when you're finishing it, like every day you see improvements and it's a rush. And then you finish something and then you show it and people clap and people like it. And you go on a film festival circuit and people say you made a great movie, and it's a great feeling. And then at some point, nobody gives a shit. And it's just another movie that's on Netflix like every other movie. So I went through that with each film, and I go through a postpartum feeling of art. I need to keep making art, and I'm not going to make something as good as the thing I just made. And it's awful. And I don't know what I'm going to make next. And it has to be as good, if not better, than the one I just did. And it's a horrible place to be as an artist. So anyways, I was in that spot. I had made An Honest Liar, and I didn't know what to do next. And I was doing a film called I Want My MTV, which is a great film about the birth of MTV. It's a very much a diversion from the stuff I've made. Anyways, a guy named Doug Fabrizio, who is the
Doug Fabrizio.
Doug's the best.
We got interviewed by Radio West at one point.
Oh, did you really? Doug's
they didn't great. They didn't use our stuff, but we got interviewed by.
Well, that's pretty good too.
And then we had them on.
Yeah, so we're like, wait, you didn't use our stuff. We'll at least come on our podcast.
And Doug's a friend, and he's a good guy. And he gave me the book. He was like, you should make a movie about Mark Hoffman. And I vaguely remembered who it was. I read the book and I went, I'm going to make this. I want to make this. I just said, I'm going to make this film, even though I knew I probably shouldn't or couldn't, or there's no way I would, but I just had to. I just had to make it. And it took a long time to get off the ground. I kept reading and I said, I'm going to make this, and it'd be very difficult. And I know a lot of people have tried. And then I was doing I Want My MTV during this period, and we had a lull. Like A&E had bought it, and there was a lull in making it. So I decided at that point, I'm just going to go do it. I'm just going to go shoot an interview, and then another interview, and then another interview. And I did it. I just started putting together a sizzle, which is like a short trailer of what the film is. And then I got Jared in it. A friend of mine said, Jared's been wanting to make a film about Mark Hoffman for a long time. And we met, and I'd known Jared. We were friends, and we'd worked together years and years prior when we were both crewing. You know, I was a grip and he was an AC, and then I was directing. I directed a Mormon boy band video. And
hold on. We might know the
Mormon. I'm going to breeze right over that.
Hold on a second here.
That's for part two.
Sorry, there's no exit on that. This is an express train.
But
there's no local stops.
Can we put it in the show notes?
I directed a Mormon boy band video for a group called Jericho Road.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God. Don't. You are not going to supersede Murder Among the Mormons talking about Jericho Road.
Okay. We'll put a pin in that.
I did a couple of their videos. The drugs were great, though.
Hell yeah.
No, they were not.
Getting hopped up or on Diet Cokes.
Anyways, I'd met Jared on that. He was my AC and I directed it. And we had lunch and I was like, dude, let's make this together. And before the check came, we said, let's do it. And then we made it. End of story.
Okay, cool.
No, it's a bit more than that. You know, I obsessed over that story. I'm going to say that I know more about Mark Hoffman and what he did than anyone else. I mean, I really, really went down a rabbit hole with Mark. I have a spreadsheet with every day I could think, every day of Mark's life, I could figure out what he was doing. I knew what he was doing at that time. Wow. I just went a little crazy because this guy was the ultimate deceiver. He was so good at forgery, and he was so complex,
and he
was so smart and so fucking stupid at the same time. And so Mormon and so not Mormon, and just such a dichotomy of a human being. Also a nerd and kind of silly and goofy. And he just, everything about him kind of appealed to me as that kind of individual. And I've written him dozens of times to no reply. I tell him, you know, I've told him, I write to him in prison. I've told him, look, I made your story. I've done it really well. And millions, tens of millions of people know about you now because of me. Yeah. Part of me is like, fuck you, man. I know you. I know you better than most people. I just want to reply. I'm kind of a little pissed off at him. You know what I mean? Like I spent a lot of time studying your art and who you are and making something about you. The least you can do is write me a letter, dude. Like that's all I want. Anyways.
Even if it's like I acknowledge you.
Like that's all I want.
I was about to say thank you, but like just like, hey,
I'm getting your letters. Noted. That's all. That's all I want. But I'll continue to write him letters. I mean, now I don't know what to write him about. I'm like, the garden's coming in. It's really nice.
I'm just going to put it out there. I'm going to throw it out into the universe. I think he's going to respond to you one day. And I think it's going to be fucking great.
I don't. I don't actually don't. So. I love your optimism.
I want to hear from our listeners, if you're team Tyler or team Mike on this, if you think Mark Hoffman.
I think that's his game. What he has is to not reply to me. That's all he has. I can know him better than anyone. And that's his game is no, you don't, because you're never going to get a letter from me.
Damn. I think you're right now. I'm already team Tyler.
Well, that's how he plays. That's how he rolls.
What if we send him like a piece of like, hey, we in the estate of Dr. Seuss, we found this little thing and we can't tell if it's real or if it was forged, and we want your expert opinion, and we write some bullshit like rhyme
and
about.
And Doug, we sent him some microdoses.
Good luck with that. They're very particular. You can't even send labels. I think the only responses he's given is if anyone writes about his forgeries and said like, hey, I have this. How did you do it? But I've done that too. And he's never, I actually found an item that may have been forged by him and people can't tell. And I wrote him a letter and he didn't. So that's fine. You know, we'll have that relationship. We'll have that. I make a movie about him and he ghosts me from Gunnison Prison. Nonetheless, I loved making that. I loved making it. I loved being able to tell that story and have fun telling it. And I love being able to, I love keeping secrets. I love my theme of work I take from Billy Wilder, who said, let the audience figure out 2 + 2 and they'll love you for it.
Wow.
So I love being able to just, and keep in mind, he said 2 + 2, not 10 plus 10 to the square root of 15, you know, make it simple. And if the audience goes, oh my God, it's 4, they feel better about it. So I love being able to like dole out as much information as the audience needs and to keep as much information before they either give up or they need to know what it is before they give up. And just at that moment when they're about to say, I don't know. Or what are you telling me? I tell them what that answer is. I like to try that. And that Murder Among the Mormons had that. It had that element of secret and deception and murder and mystery and religion and greed and forgery and stupidity and brilliance all in one. And it was, you know, it was a story in our myth. It's our mythology. It's our legend. It's our lore. Like I'm supposed to do that, right? Like if you're Irish, you tell tales of the great Irishman. And if you're Mormon, by God, you tell stories of the great Mormons or ex-Mormons. And that's how we keep our heritage. And so it was important to me that I had to tell that story. And despite the setbacks, because there were many, 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 Jared and I pitched that project to everyone, everyone. We went to every single entity and every single entity said no. Every single one, including Netflix. They all said no. Damn. And we were undaunted. I just said, to hell with it. I'm going to make it myself. I'm just going to make it, even if I have to pay for it and do it on my video camera, my phone. I'm going to make this movie. And then we took it back out. And eventually Netflix said yes. Oh, I was just goddamn determined to make that movie. Oh,
that's so awesome.
And, you know, was it financially rewarding for me? Not really, to be honest with you. I did not make even close to what I should have. Or what normal people do when they spend 4 years at a job. Not even close. And that's part of my own fault, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. But I don't care. Because I mean, like, I made that movie when I said I was going to. And that's pretty good. Man.
That's cool.
Holy shit. Yes, I'm just feeling the fucking spirit right now.
That's the whiskey.
No, it's not, man. It's more than the whiskey. It's a couple points you hit on here is this theme of like telling the Mormon stories.
Yeah.
And this came up to me with me in when I was, so I recently started going back to grad. I started grad school a few months ago and it's in psychology, in depth psychology, which is psychology of the unconscious. And I know that the thesis I'm going to write, the papers I'm going to write are going to be Mormon themed because it's my story. It's our ancestor story. It's the stories we were meant to tell. And they're fucking great stories, man.
Yeah, they really are.
We're descended from storytellers.
Uh-huh.
We're descended from a fucking guy who said like, oh yeah, that's like Zelf, the white Lamanite. Like he told stories. He told the stories of Abinadi that we were fucking talking about.
Right. He's a storyteller. And Mormons are raised to be, that's the kind of the beauty of Mormonism, unlike a lot of other religions or cults. They really do nourish artists. They like music. They want you to dance. They want you to create. They want you to make movies. They want you to create and build. And that's wonderful. And we've taken that with us, that industriousness, that bootstrappedness, but also the need to create something beautiful for the world. And I'm very thankful for that. Mm-hmm. I'm also very thankful that I went on a Mormon mission in some ways, because I can sell anything. If I can sell, you know, polygamy and Joseph Smith, strangers in Kansas, I can definitely sell a movie to an executive at Disney.
Yeah. Ooh.
You went to Kansas on your mission?
I was at Missouri Independence Mission.
Oh, shit, dude. Ooh,
damn,
I really went for it. Yeah.
Spent a lot of time in Kansas and Nebraska. I learned the language.
Yeah.
It was fine. It was great. It was a fine mission. I mean, I had a good time. I learned a lot. I had a blast. I had so much fun on my mission. It was, you know, it was a really fun period, actually. I mean, I should have been fun. I was 18, 19 years old, which you're supposed to be doing when you're 19. You
deserve to have fun.
Right.
So without giving too much away, Tyler, what's got you curious right now? Like, what are you kind of feeling some passion about? And if you can't answer that, that's totally
cool. No, of course. You know, look, I do love this podcast. I do love it. As a storyteller, and I like to say story maker, because it's other people's stories that I'm doing and I'm just making them. It's really enjoyable to just tell the story of one person. And to tell it in the simplest manner of just an interview and one person, as opposed to cameras and lights and studios and pitches and traveling and budgets and editing and all that. And I'm able to just really get back to like, let's tell a story in the best way we can with one person telling it. And I love doing that. And I'm putting a lot of energy into it right now in some facets. But I've also got some projects that I'm pitching around. I love the genre of music. I loved making I Want My MTV. So the ink isn't dry yet, but I'm doing a project for Paramount, music based, that I should start in January. And then I'll say it here. I'm not really trying to keep it a secret, but I think I want to tell the Joseph Smith story in a documentary form.
Yes.
And I'm trying to figure out how to do that. So that's one thing.
Well, I mean, let's just tap into the networking power of our dozens of listeners and get that word out there.
And you say networking power. I mean, we are the kings of networking, MLMs. Like we know the missions. We know how to network. We know how to now the whiskey's talking.
Well, great. Tyler said it. If we can sell door-to-door polygamy, we certainly can sell someone's juice that they got out of, you know, some Caribbean island, or some cream that comes from a Himalayan mountainside. Like, we can sell anything. So that's why MLMs are like,
I'm so stuck on the phrase door-to-door polygamy. You just said door-to-door polygamy.
I mean, that's right.
Hey,
that could be
a great name for a band or whatever. Door-to-door polygamy.
God. Love it.
I'm just trying to make stories, man. And someone out there to pay me to do it. Trying to just convince people to give me money to do things I want to do. That's basically what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
So,
and you know, they're going to keep doing it. I'm having some breakthrough moments here, and I know it's the High West whiskey and there's a lot of it, but Tyler, just like your energy, your passion, the passion you give to your art. So like, I've never considered myself much of an artist, right? I was born and raised Mormon. I went in accounting of all things, but Mormons on Mushrooms has been my art. You know, one time I, in talking about Freudian slips, Doug, my, therapist was like, I don't even remember the word, but magnus opus in a way of like Mormons on Mushrooms and what we're doing here. But in listening to you talk about your art and the passion you have for it, it's like, there's an element where I've approached Mormons on Mushrooms with this like, you know what, I'm just going to come record, do it, bleed on a paper and see what happens. Yeah. But there's an element of like, you know what, I could add, like bring a lot more passion to it. A lot more like, this is what I want to do with my life and my story and my, and just like really bring my whole self to it in this beautiful way that like I've been hesitant to.
First and foremost, I don't like hearing people say I'm not creative. I think people need to, we're creative beings, some more than others. I'm relatively creative. I work through it. I have my limitations. I just bury my head and say, I'm going to do it until it's great. And that's how I overcome my weaknesses of not being an amazing, wonderful writer, storyteller. But I do think people look up and say, well, how are you so creative? I wish I were more creative. Well, be more creative. It is a muscle. And if people were more creative, again, the world would be a better place. If politicians and lawyers and actors or anyone basically embraced their creativity and said, I'm going to be more creative in my accounting, not fraudulent. But, you know, I think we can say creativity is not limited to the poet and the dancer and the musician, or the filmmaker. Creativity is in everyone. So figure out ways to just embrace your creativity because your brain wants to do it. Your brain wants to make stories. Your brain wants to invent shit, make stuff up, figure something out. I'll tell you what we love, especially as men, and I'm going to categorize that, generalize it. We love finishing something. We love it, man. We love it. We love building a deck and leaning back and going, I made that deck. Hey, Todd, come look at my I made that deck. We love that.
Yeah.
And we want to do that. And I love that, man. I love making something and going, look what I made. Hey, everyone, check it out. I love it. And we all love that. And there's a rush in that. And there's endorphins in that and dopamine in making something great, knowing that I made this and I'm going to show it to somebody and I'm going to embrace my creativity. And I didn't need to make that. I didn't need to make that. No one needed that podcast, but I made it because it was my idea and I did it. And I created it and the world maybe is better for it and I'm better for it. Wow. So just make it. Stop putting those limitations that I'm not artistic enough or creative enough or whatever. Doesn't mean quit your job and be a poet, Mike. Yeah. Don't. But you know, just you're not going to play Major League Baseball. You're not. I'm going to say it right now, and I'm sorry to put that damper on you. But what you can be is more creative.
Yeah.
You know, we can. You can be more athletic. You can be. You can exercise. You can work out. You can take some classes. You can be more athletic. You can also be more creative.
Yeah.
Just like you can be athletic. And it's a beautiful feeling to be more creative.
Yeah.
The world's a better place when you're more creative and you can embrace that. So that's my sermon on the mount.
Yeah. And Tyler, kind of like, so I have to do these discussion posts for my school, right? And this ties perfectly into this because the question was like, how does Western religion, think of the God image we have. And the God image is like, if you think of God as in like the image we create of God. Sorry, this is the whiskey
white man
fucking
with a beard,
talking, guys.
Right. What's, white man with a beard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We corrupt the true nature of the unknowable. We talk about the unknowable. It's like this thing out there, but we put an image to it and the image helps us understand that. But when we associate too much with the image, we can lose our sense of what the it really is, right? And so you think of a Mormonism and this masculine God, right? But Mormonism is a little like weird because we have this heavenly mother floating out there, which is different from like any Protestant religion. Where we do have a feminine, but we don't acknowledge her, right? So I wrote this post, which was like, there's this divine feminine like percolating in Mormonism, which is there. And you feel it because it's like we're born of heavenly parents. And so you can deduct that we came from a heavenly mother. And there's some hymns that talk about her.
Yeah, dude. Oh, my father.
What's that? Yeah, my father, right?
Yeah.
Truth is reason. Truth eternal says that I, did I butcher it? Says that I have a mother there.
I think you're dead on. Yeah, says I have a mother there.
And, but there's something cool about it because you have this very masculine religion that's all about capitalism and getting degrees in being a lawyer, accountant, whatever, a business person, so you can be a mission president and very much doing religion. But under the undercurrent of it all is this like expression in art. It's the road shows of like the 20th century. It's the, whenever we build a fucking temple, we have like this like cultural celebration where we bring in dance and art. There's like this, like, it's like Heavenly Mother is like peeking her head above consciousness, where it's like you can just see the crown of her head and everything else is buried in the subconscious.
Sure.
And so,
or misogyny keeps her down because they don't want to admit that a woman might actually have something to say,
yeah,
or have some control or have done something other than say yes to a man. So,
yeah, I mean, but so in all of us, in all of us Mormons, is this archetype of this feminine that's been this been repressed. And I had a dream early on before I started the podcast of like this pushing a little girl down into a well, like keeping her stuff down, and she's about to come out. And I think Mormons are about to come out in this like beautiful way where it's like you were talking about, like, I just slurred my words there, guys, sorry.
No, but that sounds great.
I'm prophesying here. It's like she's coming out, and like creativity, lean into that, lean into this feminine, lean into this, your passions, your beauty, your art, bring it out. It's time to get that girl fucking out of the well, bring her into, like, have her dance, you know, like what you're doing with your art. I think, I don't know. Let's just go get a little crazy, guys. It's time for a fucking Mormon Renaissance where we're all gonna kind of like ex-Mormon Renaissance in a way. Where it's like we're tapping into, and I told this to you at our last lunch. I said, creative energy is sexual energy.
That's right.
And that's why the church wanted to stamp down our sexual energy, to keep this in a box and like hold it down. But they can't keep it in a box anymore. It's coming out.
Right. They can point it in the right direction as they wanted to do for some period. But yeah.
And so what I'm saying is like, let her out.
I love that, Mike. Let Heavenly Mother out. Hashtag.
It's time for Heavenly Mother to come out. Even if it's Heavenly Mothers, I don't know what it is, but like, let them come out.
Yeah.
It's time.
I think it's time for some truths to be told. Yes. I think it's time for admission and truths. And we were wrong about things, whether it comes from a large entity or a large corporation or an individual. I think it's time. But it doesn't mean it will happen. I don't know. You know, I just like making art and hanging out with good people. So,
which is what we're fucking doing, man.
For me.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
In Pasadena, California.
Yep.
Or not.
Or not. Right.
Or Doug's in Idaho. But Doug, next time you come here, you need to come visit this little space. Sorry, I just invited you.
Sounds like totally fine. We'll have a
sounds
party.
Sounds like I'm invited. I'll have a party. Bring come my witch burning Utes. Kit if you guys
man,
want to.
The join Utes me. Are going to be playing right down the street from me, man.
Who?
The Utes. They're in the Rose Bowl.
Oh yeah.
Doug, I think we might be in fucking Mexico for that though. Shit.
Hey, Mike. You know, Utah State is playing in the LA Bowl the week before Christmas, and I was thinking about coming down to go to that game. So
I think we should do that on the 18th.
That's the thing. Yeah.
Want to come to Utah State game with us?
Maybe.
Sounds like a commitment to me.
That's Let's a hard maybe.
I want to go to the Rose Bowl, but prices, tickets are pretty steep.
Are they?
Yeah.
Even in the COVID area, huh?
Oh, that place will be filled.
It'll be filled.
That place is holy. Like, you walk into the Rose Bowl, I mean, I got the same feeling walking through the Sistine Chapel as I got when I first walked into the Rose Bowl in my life. There's some history there. So I'm a big sports fan. So sometimes, you know, we're pretty hippy dippy podcast, but sometimes I let sports kind of permeate into our
I get it, man. I love sports. Yeah. I love it for the most part. I realize that it can break my heart at some points, but oh, yeah. I love the beauty of sports.
Well, before we wrap up.
Yes.
I have to say, so like Doug, we recorded like our first commercial a couple of weeks ago, and then we did like a quasi commercial for houseplant ceramics for my wife, which that wasn't like a commercial, but we were just like, hey, let's talk about my wife.
So we were kind of drunkenly rambling about your wife's pottery is what that was.
Yeah. I do want to like sponsor David Brammer on this episode because he connected us.
He introduced us. Yeah. The Bram.
The Bram introduced us. So this episode is sponsored to David.
Sure. Brammer. Bram's a good fella, man. He's a goofy bastard. He's a fan. I've known him for years.
Yeah.
Yeah. David Brammer. Shout out to you, buddy.
This episode is for and in behalf of Dave Brammer, who is not dead, but who is cool.
As far as we know.
As far as we know. I hope. Yeah. Well.
Right. No, this has been great, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And, thank you.
Thanks for letting me ramble on a little bit. Thanks for the High West. Thanks for the multiple plugs for the podcast.
Yeah.
If you see just a tiny little spike in your downloads, you know exactly where the fuck I'm from. Yeah.
You'll see 12. Wait, we had like a million. Now we have a million. 12? What?
Alert the authorities.
Look, I will say that it's a fun podcast and it's inspiring. Like each episode, it's not just like crazy salaciousness of cults, but these are brave people, man. These are really brave people who... The episode that'll drop in 2 days is a most remarkable woman who left the most horrific childhood I think I've heard anyone tell. She was raised in the Children of God, which I think is the worst cult there is out there. And she literally had to work every day at re-changing her mind to be able to have an original thought. And it's inspiring and amazing and wonderful. And if she can be who she is now, we all can. And to tell her story, a yoga instructor in Orange County is basically what she is. To be able to tell that story and to affect somebody in Scotland, that's a beautiful thing for me. To be able to be that conduit of a woman who lived in a horrific life and overcame it and is better now, and somebody in a far off country can be a better human because of it. Like that, I don't need a nice car. I just need to know that I'm doing that. And that puts me to bed at night, which I need to do soon because it's late.
Yeah, it's late. And I was going to say that, like, I think yours is at the tip of the iceberg of where your podcast is going to go with this. And thanks. I'm excited to be a witness to it. And that's what I want to say.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Appreciate it, guys.
Hey, Tyler, thanks for letting me tag along with the two of you today. It's really good to meet you. And this has been so fun. I appreciate it a ton. Thank you.
Not at all, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Peace out, dudes. It'll be awkward when we hang up and you two are just like looking at each other. And it's like, well, there's
we're going to have a little makeout session. Yeah.
We're gonna let the whiskey talk.
Enjoy. Okay. Bye, fellas.
Thanks. Yeah, bye, guys.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to Mormons on Mushrooms podcast. We have so much fun recording it. And if you love it, we would absolutely love it if you could leave a review on wherever you get your podcasts. It would really help our visibility so more people can listen to it and be enlightened and hear our crazy stories. So thanks again for tuning in.